Richard Carr is responsible for the contents of this program. Views expressed are not those of Tower Square Securities or its affiliates and should not be taken as legal or tax advice. Always seek the guidance of a qualified professional before making any financial decisions.
Good morning, everybody. This is Ryan Kittredge from Richard Carr & Associates. I'm here with Brendan King today, and we are filling in for Rich, who is on vacation for the weekend with his family in Nantucket. So I hope that he brought his plaid shorts and pastels there with the kids and hopefully have a little bit nicer weather than we're having here.
Yeah, that's it's rough to get a day off, because I'm sure he's ever here every Saturday. And then the one Saturday you take off, it's a washout.
That's right. Right. He did tell me a couple months ago that I was going to do every Saturday in June through August. So that hasn't held up true, but I can fill in a few times for him, and that's great.
As long as it rains, you don't mind filling in.
No, exactly. I don't. So welcome, Brendan. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. Thanks for having me here. Thanks for having me back, I should say. It's
right.
Been about a year since I've been back on.
Wow, that long,
yeah,
huh?
So the probation was about a year. Yeah.
Well, nice to have you back.
Great.
Brendan is an estate planning and elder law attorney from Estate Preservation Law Offices right on Elm Street in Worcester. And I've known Brendan now for, I'd say, about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it's about that. Absolutely. Yeah, it seems like 10, though, right?
I mean, it does. Does. Old buddies. So Brendan is really unique in the fact that his group of attorneys focuses solely on estate planning and elder law issues. They're not kind of an all-around attorney, so they're very good experts in their field. And, I always call you up as a reference all the time. You get a random call from me and just say, hey, I got to run this by you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think that's the way law has become. It's one of those things where, almost like medicine, you know, or I think most professions, including your own, you rarely say I do it all in your profession. Mm-hmm. I think that these days things are so complicated that in order to do it efficiently and effectively, you've really got to focus. And so that's what our firm does. We do estate planning. And then, of course, on the other side, the state administration, trust administration. During life, we focus a lot on asset protection, nursing homes, and that sort of thing, general creditor protection, special needs planning, that sort of thing. So, you know, estate planning, as you can kind of see, even subdivides out with all those different areas. And so that's where we really put our focus. And in fact, we rely very much on other professionals as well. I mean, I call you up too. I mean, things come down the pike. And I think that, the more you specialize, the more you rely on others. And I think it's better for the client to have more heads at the table.
Oh, definitely. It's the best thing. And, I'm still developing this being pretty young, but a really good team of advisors in the area of people you trust. And
right.
I have mortgage officers, bankers, people in property casualty insurance, and it's really good because these questions arise, then your clients look to you to become their trusted advisor and really quarterback a lot of different scenarios. So it's nice to have people you can lean on who are going to give you right answers.
Stuff gets complicated, and I think clients know that. I think clients expect you to not know everything, and I think that where you really want to be as an advisor, and I think we get this all the time, where clients will ask us, Who paints your house?
Mm-hmm.
So to the point where, they just, they trust that you're decision making. And so right down to, who you choose to put the paint on your house.
Right.
And so I think that it is. And it really has become that kind of world that we live in. And clients do understand that. So oftentimes, we don't try to be heroes. We'll say, hey, listen, we don't know that, but we can certainly find out. And, we'll give Ryan a call to figure it out.
Sure. Oh, well, thanks, Brendan. Appreciate that. And it's true. I mean, with as much information as there is out there and how easily accessible it is, you can just go online, Google anything, find the answer. But the problem is that it's always very general.
Yeah.
And, for instance, if it's a painting situation, if you have a certain area of your house that's a little tricky, the different type of wall, you got to really have somebody come and take a look and give you what's right for your situation.
Yeah, yeah, it's the source of the information. I mean, heck, there's a lot of stuff on the internet, and people will come and ask us right out of the box, how much does it cost to do a will? And, we get these questions too. And I think that, what we always tend to say is, well, listen, the information's there. I think what you're looking for us as advisors is to have a source of good information, because there's a lot of information. The question is whether it's good information.
Sure.
And I spend a good amount or fair amount of my time just dispelling a lot of the urban legends or myths that are out there about, what you may read. we see all the time, you know, go online and, you know, bang out a will for, you know, $75 or whatever.
Right.
If that's what you want, then there it is. I mean, that's certainly a market, mm-hmm. but, mm-hmm. you know, people pay us for advice as to how to put things together. And then we do have documents we bring to the table, but we're not just banging these things out. They're tools of the trade that we apply to a certain situation or a client situation, depending on, you know, what we diagnose. Just, again, I keep referring to medicine. You can tell that I was a failed pre-med student because I keep going back to my buddies who are doctors here. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, just as a physician will diagnose an issue and then apply medicine to it or write your prescription or whatever it is, it's the same thing. You know, you don't know what you have. Unless, you know, if you're diagnosing yourself and going online and getting pills, well, if you're that kind of guy, maybe an online will is good for you.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So different situations right. require a different level of due diligence.
Right.
So hopefully have a great show today. I encourage everybody to call in with questions for Brendan in regard to any type of estate planning topics or legal issues. The number here at WTAG is 508-755-0058. I just want to do a quick market update, as Rich always does. So Friday, the Dow finished down 115 points, or down almost 1%, finishing up at 11,934. Obviously been a very volatile last 8 weeks or so in the market on the negative side. But despite the pullback, we're still up 3.1% year to date. So still optimistic halfway through the year. So on pace still at this point for 6%. The S&P finished down 15 points or 1.25%, closing at 1,268. The NASDAQ down 34 points, or down roughly 1.25 as well, finishing at 2,653. The 10-year Treasury down just slightly again, but now to 2.87%. Who would have thought if you asked a couple years ago that interest rates would continue to fall? But now if you tie up your money for 10 years with the government, you get whopping 2.87%.
Wow, yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, things have changed, huh?
Right. Not bad in the last couple of years, considering no inflation, but certainly that's going to be an issue again. Gold finished down $1,850 per ounce, or down 1.25% as well, but finishing at $1,502 per ounce. So still on that ridiculous climb over the last year, still up 20%. We would have never have thought that gold would continue at that pace, but still obviously so much uncertainty out there. Gold is a good hedge against that. And oil finished down, hooray, for everybody out there filling up their their cars this weekend, down about 1.2% to $91.23 per barrel. But still, despite the drop in the last couple months, which has been nice, we're still up 15% over the last year. So again, we're going to go to commercial in just a minute here. But again, when we return, please call in 508-755-0058 for any questions for Mr. Brendan King. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. This is Ryan Kittredge from Richard Karn Associates on Park Ave, Worcester, here with Brendan King from Estate Preservation Law Offices on Elm Street in Worcester. Hi, Brendan.
Hey, Ryan. So what you do this weekend?
Well, beginning of the weekend, so yeah. still time, but it's interesting because the issue that you just mentioned to me on Thursday when we were talking was talking about some changes with pet laws and pet trusts.
Right.
So it's funny because I actually just bought a puppy yesterday.
Yeah.
That's afternoon.
Why I said what you do this week, because I know what it's going to be.
Well, not sleep.
It's going to be taking care of that puppy.
I barely got any sleep last night, so I hear people talking about newborn infants, and I feel like I'm having a kid.
Right.
Just a hairy
puppies
one.
And babies, your weekends are dictated. You know, so I can answer what I'm going to do before the weekend even starts. And you know, I've got four kids under 8 and under, and and before that we had the puppy and did the puppy thing, and it is a I mean, you have that level of reliance on from another living being to yourself, it's game over,
right? So I think my weekend is going to basically be feed him, take him out.
That's right.
He won't go to the bathroom, then he'll come inside, pee there, clean that up, and just do it all over again.
That's pretty much how it goes. It's and what Ryan and I were discussing about what's coming down the pike, or what has been happening in the laws, and speaking of pets, you know, earlier this year I think it was the beginning of the year, January 7th, the governor had signed this new pet trust law. So, you know, what you can do, Ryan, now is, of course, now that you have this pet, you can leave your entire estate to this pet. And do we have a name or anything?
Not yet, actually. Okay. Still feeling him out, getting a little sense of the personality before I name him. But I don't know that I would want to bestow this gift, you could say, upon anybody right now.
Right.
But I'm sure once he's trained, becomes a good boy, we'll have a good bond.
Well, you know, it's and I think that's what ends up happening is that, you know, certainly the bonds, but there are a lot of animal lovers that are out there. And this new pet trust bill that was signed in January went into effect April 7th. We've been getting a lot of questions about this at our office, and in fact, there was a front page article in the TNG a bit ago. In fact, it was April 16th, just after the law went into effect, and front page article, it was a Saturday edition. And it was an article by one of our clients and one of our attorney, Melissa Glick, who has been dealing with this issue quite a bit, and we have been as a firm historically people wanting to leave their assets to their animals.
Oh yeah, we've had those meetings a couple last year when there was no provision for this in Massachusetts yet.
Right. It's been very interesting, you know, and historically, you know, you could always do it, but the issue became enforceability.
Right.
These trusts were honorary trusts, we call them, because. And a true trust is an agreement where a grantor or settlor sets up an agreement with a trustee, and future trustees typically after they pass away, where they're going to leave assets in trust for the benefit of somebody else who can enforce it, whether that be a charity, whether that be an individual. And so that's really what you need historically, common law, to set up a trust. Well, if you have an animal as a beneficiary, who's going to enforce that?
Right.
You know, Rover's not going to come into court and petition to to remove the trustee. You're just not going to have those situations come in without some sort of statutory legislation behind it.
Exactly.
And that's what has come in. And so we're Massachusetts is following about 40 states. We're actually late to the game on this, believe it or not. About 40 other states have already done this.
Right.
And
I've heard in England it's been there for over 100 years now.
You know, they've been doing trusts a long time, so I'm not surprised that they themselves are a little ahead of the curve, and it's not surprising. I think it's good legislation. I think, you know, we, as yourself, have clients that come in, and there's a lot of couples or single individuals who come in, and they don't have children.
Right.
And they do want to leave something behind for the care and upkeep of their pets or their horses or whatever it ends up being, and it's nice to have some enforceability behind this, because again, they could always do it, but it would be honorary. In other words, the trustee could do it if they wish to carry it out, but there's nothing really backing that up.
We had a client last year who had about roughly $40,000 that she had earmarked for her dog, and her plan was to leave it to her nephew and say, "Well, no, he loves dogs, and you know, because dogs become part of the family, they really do." I had dogs growing up my whole life. I've been living on my own now for about 6 years, and it's just the timing wasn't right. But now I'm at a place where it made sense. But I mean, geez. I think at times my parents liked the dog more than us. I'm sure a lot of the time.
What do you mean at times?
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, her goal was to her dog was only about 2 years old, but, you know, so really just had become a left puppyhood. But she wanted to leave this dog to her nephew. And we're thinking, geez, we don't want to say anything, but, you know, $40,000 to her nephew, who's, you know, in his 30s, single.
Right.
It's very tempting for him to say, well, you know, we need to go on vacation, and it's for the dog,
or I'll take the 40 G's and suddenly I developed an allergic reaction to dogs, you know, after postmortem. So, you know, it's really one of those things about enforceability, and that was always it, the teeth behind, no pun intended, the put some bite into this, I'm going to have to stop here, this legislation, and really made these trusts now enforceable. And of course, it's brand new, and we really need to, you know, see how some of this stuff plays out, but it is nice to have something to lean on. And typically, I mean, people ask, how can you structure it? How much, you know, money can I put in this? You know, Massachusetts courts can certainly limit if you put that, like that Leona Helmsley situation, you know, if you put tens of millions of dollars in trust for one poodle or something. I mean, sometimes it can get out of control there. You still need to be somewhat realistic. And again, that's where advisors come in. And typically, the way it would probably be structured is you can name a trustee. You can have a that would be in charge of distributing the money to maybe the caretaker for the benefit of the dog. You could have a trust protector to make sure the trustee does that.
Mm-hmm.
It's backed by future beneficiaries, because chances are when the dog passes, where does the money go from there? It can go maybe to a charity, to other individuals. They can actually make sure that the trustee is doing what they're supposed to be doing. So
right.
It does.
There are some checks and balances now.
There are some checks and balances now. It's and it's really one of those things that a lot of our clients have asked us about, and mm-hmm. certainly intend to come back and revisit their plan.
Yeah.
So, now that, if you have a plan that's set up and where that was possibly a desire of yours and maybe you didn't go ahead with it, it's certainly something that now can be amended, or if you haven't done it because you've always wanted to do it, you can certainly set up a plan now that accomplishes this.
That's great.
Yeah.
Because we tell people with everything, but especially in regard to estate planning, you want to be as specific as possible with
right.
your intentions and leave as little up to interpretation from
right.
the courts or from relatives
sure.
Potentially becoming adversarial and battling it out for control of assets or whatnot. So this is nice that there's actually a viable solution that is has those parameters around it, and you're not just leaving it up to the goodwill and integrity of somebody when it's a situation involving potentially a lot of money, because pets are not inexpensive, and especially if you want to provide them with better options,
sure.
and then certainly later in life, specifically with medical issues, it can be costly. So I know surgeries, I've talked to people where for their dog to just preserve their life maybe cost $4,000 or $5,000 in certain cases.
And that's the way things are going. Things are going that way. My father used to always say, get the pet that you want, because it's the cheapest part of the pet is
mm-hmm.
buying it.
Right.
Once you have the pet, then you're right. Then you've got the vet bills and everything else. And I have had dogs that have developed cancer and different things. And we spent thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of times to no avail. But what are you going to do? I'm not going to
not
do it.
You're going to not spend it.
Right.
Exactly. You're
right.
going to have to find a way.
And so you see these things develop, and it's just, I knew this was just a matter of time, because you see, this pet insurance that
mm-hmm.
we actually had after that issue with my dog.
Is that a good deal?
It's one of those things when we needed it, we didn't have it, and then when I had it, I didn't need it. So, you're probably asking
insurance.
The wrong guy, but,
yeah.
If it ever lined up again, yeah, it's a good thing to have.
Okay.
It's just speaking from experience and how much I've spent on that particular issue and health issues.
Yeah, that's great. And I'll just make a quick point too, as far as, like you said, the initial investment really isn't the largest cost. So the puppy that I just purchased is from a reputable breeder. They've been
yeah.
doing it for over 30 years. And it's all the certificates. It's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't cheap.
Right.
But I know that by having those guarantees and knowing the pedigree, that it's going to save a lot of headaches as
yeah.
far as temperament and potential
sure.
issues with regard to aggression issues
yeah.
to everything from health cost of medical bills. So it's worth it. I mean, there's so many backyard breeders out there looking to just mate, any two dogs, make a quick buck, but it's really not good for the breed, and it's not good for the people in the long run. So that's just
sure.
a quick plug there
sure.
to make sure that you go with somebody who doesn't have the dollar signs in their eyes, isn't just trying to sell your dog, but really ask some questions to know that the dog is going to get a good quality of life, or it doesn't have to be just the dog, but any animal.
Absolutely.
So I just want to mention, Brendan has a newsletter that he sends out. So any of the topics that we're going to speak about today, if you want that newsletter, get in touch with Brendan. His email address is bking, so BKING at estatepreservationlaw.com. So you can email him, or you can email myself. It's ryan@carfinancial.net. Email either of us if you're interested. You don't have to write specific points down, but you can just send us an email. We can get you set up on Brendan's newsletter. I read it. It's very valuable, and it's relevant. It's, like this,
yeah.
new issues.
Yeah, and in the topics we're talking about today, pet trust being one of them, is in this latest edition. So I'd be happy to send it to you by email, or, give us a call, 508-751-5010. Again, 508-751-5010.
Great. And so when we come back, I think we're going to talk about some of the changes with the estate tax and many other different changes for this year and next when we return. Welcome back, everybody. This is Ryan Kittredge with Richard Carr and Associates filling in for Rich today on the Financial Freedom Show here at WTAG. I'm here with Brendan King, estate planning attorney. And if you have any questions for Brendan, please give us a call. We have some topics, but we're always like to, you know, I like Brendan to be caught off guard. So if you want to call in and stump him with some obscure, you know, tax change in New Mexico, then that would be great and entertaining. So the number here is 508-755-0058 if you have any questions for Brendan. So I think what we're going to talk about now are some of those changes with the estate tax, the elusive estate tax, very popular, convoluted, complex issue that makes it really hard to plan with, well, with all the changes.
You know what? Why it is that way. It's because, at least at the federal level, not so much at the state level, but at the federal level, it's a political item. You know, you've got the Republicans who want to get rid of it, and the Democrats who want to, you know, keep it, and so there's this back and forth. So I think there's always this, you know, it's in, it's out, it's in, you know, and you and you're pulling at it from both sides, and you create this monster, and it becomes very difficult for us oftentimes to be advisors on something that changes so much. Now, the good news for business for us, I guess, is that the one thing that hasn't changed is when we're talking about transfer taxes, we're talking about, of course, the estate tax, the gift tax, and the generation skipping tax. And typically, a lot of focus when you see it on the news is given to the federal legislation. But being mass residents, there's a Massachusetts estate tax.
Much lower threshold.
Much lower threshold. Exactly. And you use the exactly the right word. It's a threshold tax, so that as soon as you cross it, you end up paying tax on everything,
right,
as opposed to the federal level, which is an exemption. So that, you
above
know,
and beyond.
Right, you taxed above and beyond. So there's a certain amount that you can get out, and then, you know, you're taxed from dollar one above and beyond. So, you know, historically speaking, last year was the big year, the 2010 federally, where everyone was joking about how plugs were going to be pulled everywhere and people wanted to die in 2010.
Yeah. And talk December about 31st, 11:59 p.m.
I always chuckle because sometimes, you know, tax becomes one of those things where you can get so lost in it that people would actually say to me, well, that's when I want to die. And I'd say, you really want to die, you know, like, to avoid paying this tax?
It
is funny because the tax tail really can wag the desired dog sometimes as to what you're trying to accomplish. And that federal estate tax in that year was something that was, you know, was very interesting because people were like, oh, there's no estate tax, no estate tax. But what was less understood, less known, was the fact that there was no step up in basis or very limited step up in basis in that year.
So they got you the other way.
They got you the other way. So they were going to collect it one way or
the
other.
Is that what the government does? They when enough people complain about one thing, they eliminate it and slowly slide it in somewhere else, something else.
It's kind of like that game I used to go to Hampton Beach, like whack a weasel. And, and you whack one weasel down and three more come up.
Great analogy.
And yeah, you know, and really, you know, it's like that, is that, you know, we've got to make, the government has to run. So, you know, the money has to come in. So, you know, if the estate tax was, oh, we're going to get rid of it, we're going to get rid of it. They did technically one year, 2010. But at the end of the year, the change was, and this being a day that we're talking about different changes and updates in the law, at the end of the year, and it was December 17th that the president signed, and get ready for this. And I love the marketing. And marketing is really in everything. And you love the marketing of this tax. Listen to this. The Tax Relief Unemployment Insurance Reauthorization and Job Creation Act of 2010. Doesn't that sound really nice?
It takes a while to say.
And the marketing is just, it's wonderful. I mean, the tax relief, it starts right off the back. Oh, we're going to get some relief here.
This is great.
Yeah, so in fact, what it did was, that's this law that was put in.
So what does it really mean?
Well, what it really means is that the 2010 no estate tax, the estate tax came back. So the relief was that the estate tax came back.
That's that example of what the broker selling a property. It's not a price reduction. It's a price improvement.
Yeah, marketing, right?
Yeah,
it's how you sell it, how you spin it. But anyways, that particular act that was signed into law took the 2010 law where there was no estate tax and made it a $5 million exemption and made it retroactive. Now, in 2010, you had an option. You could have kept, if you died in that year, you could still keep the no estate tax in the limited basis, but you'd have to elect to do so because the law was now at retroactive back that it's a $5 million exemption. And that's going to stay for 2011 and 2012. Right. And so, again, well, we get this relief that had come in. The issue still is, well, what happens in 2 years? And I suppose, you know, it's good and bad news for advisors like us when, you know, these things are constantly changing that, you know, we get, you know, I guess the downside is we have to keep up with this stuff. And I guess the good side is that we have to keep up with this stuff because people come to us.
It keeps us employed.
That's right.
You can't just Google it. Do all the planning on your own.
That's right.
So let me ask you about now, because we have, it's really with those types of limits on the federal level, it's not the majority of our clients. Right. We have a few where that's applicable at this time. You know, anything could change.
It's applicable to you, right?
Of course. You know, but we have a lot of clients where the Massachusetts level is very relevant.
Absolutely.
So can you talk about those limits and really how it affects more people than they think?
Well,
you know, millionaire is not what it used to be.
And I think that's a great point, Ryan. And really what ends up happening is that people will say to us, well, I heard the new exemption's $5 million, so I'm all set, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have to do that. And it's true federally, but again, as we had indicated, when you live in Massachusetts, we have this state, and the threshold's pretty low at $1 million. Now, I say pretty low, and people are like, oh, okay, Mr. Lawyer, you know, you have $1 million.
Right.
It's more than what you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Really what ends up happening is when we sit down with our clients, we have them fill out an intake sheet, as I'm sure your office does too, Ryan, when you sit down with someone, you're gathering assets. The estate tax covers a lot more than people think. In other words, people might think, you know, well, all I have is this life insurance policy and my retirement plan and all these things, and that all has beneficiary designations, and so there's no estate. Well, there's no probate estate. Okay, in that example, okay, if you have life insurance, it goes to your kids, and you have your IRA or your 401k, and that goes to your kids, and you have transfer on death on all your different accounts. Okay,
right.
So you avoided probate, but the estate tax covers what's called the gross taxable estate.
Everything.
So exactly. So if you own a life insurance policy, if you know, obviously you own your IRAs and the TOD accounts, you add all that stuff back in, and if that's over $1 million, and I'm talking about the proceeds of a life insurance policy, which sometimes is an instant estate.
Exactly. You That's know, why, I mean, it's so popular with these issues to get it out of the estate.
Right.
You know, set up that irrevocable trust. Because how many people, you think about it, someone middle of their working career, young children, say they earn $100,000 a year income, all they want to do is replace 10 years of their working income.
Sure.
I mean, their children, their family, their spouse is counting on that for the next, say, 30 years. So $1 million is not a huge life insurance policy when you're talking about replacing income and that loss.
That's right. And so a lot of times what we'll see is that younger couples who come in who oftentimes, you know, predicate our conversations and say, or you know, hey, Brendan, you know, before we get into this, I don't really have a lot of, you know, assets. I don't want to really, you know, we don't really need to get into too much of these. I see you ask a lot of questions. I'm like, well, fill it out anyways, and we'll talk about it. And sure enough, you know, he has $1 million or $2 million term policy, or the one through work, or that's an instant estate for a young family.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you've got the young family. Then as they get older, they just start accumulating, and that issue becomes worse.
Right.
And the state tax, you know, again, taxes everything. It doesn't have the 35% bite that the federal estate tax has when you get to that level, but it taxes you anywhere from 0.04 to 16%. So, you know, when it does come time to pay, it's still a good size
16%
chunk,
on a couple $1 million.
You know, well, yeah, and it kind of scales up. So the more you have, it's a graduated as opposed to the feds, which is a flat 35.
Right. So what level do you need to be at that 16%?
Well, just to kind of give you an idea of where you start getting hit with that on $1 million, you're looking at about $35,000. You know, for estate taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the trick here is too that, you know, you got to keep keep an eye on when you're, you know, if you're married, because married couples can get caught off guard, as I know you know, with respect to estate taxes if they don't plan ahead of time. A lot of times, if spouses don't, you know, shelter a certain amount from mm-hmm. going to the other spouse, then we lose the first adai's tax-free amount that we could have gotten out from right. their estate. So we have that marital deduction that kind of shoots things back and forth. So a lot of times, married couples need to set up special trusts to kind mm-hmm. of preserve some of those credits without losing it so that we can get more to the next generation.
Right. And when you say shelter, I mean, you're not talking about necessarily irrevocable trust. I mean, there are different planning right. instruments, different right. strategies.
That's right.
They don't all involve legal framework, but even under that umbrella, there are several different options.
Absolutely.
I mean, gifting strategies.
Sure. Sure.
So yeah, there are a lot of options.
This is a good year for gifting, actually, with the very high gifting, $5 million of gifting threshold mm-hmm. that we have federally. A lot of our clients this year have started making significant gifts and getting those out of the estate and out of the mass taxable estate, too. Now, you know, that will be those gifts, taxable gifts, will be brought back for a filing threshold, but basically out of the tax base. So a lot of times our clients will come in and ask us about making some of those gifts. Now, again, to your point, Ryan, you know, do people really have to worry about that for estate taxes and mass? Are they worried about nursing homes? You know, what's their real concern? And that's really why we kind of address them all through the intake sheet, find out what their concerns are, and then hit them from there.
Right. Yeah, people a lot of times will come in, same with us, for one specific need. Yeah. We're asking ancillary questions that maybe exactly. don't seem that relevant, but you need to know all the facts to be able to provide the best options.
That's right.
So great. Brennan, thanks for being here again. We're going to commercial in just a minute. Welcome back, everybody. This is Ryan Kittredge filling in for Rich today on the Financial Freedom Show here with estate planning attorney Brendan King from Worcester. And I think we're going to start going right to the phones. We have John from Worcester.
Hello.
Hi, John. How are you?
Hi, fine. I want to talk about the durable power of attorney.
Okay.
I have one for my wife, and my wife has one for me.
Great. Okay?
And they were both made in 1997. Now, someone says I have to update them. There is no change on them. Do I have to update them?
You know, that's a great question, John. Legally, there's probably, unless it's been revoked in some way, legally there's nothing wrong with the powers of attorney that you have. What we've been finding lately, and what I'm sure the advisor or whoever was telling you to update this has probably had the same experience we're having in our office, is that a lot of institutions are giving our clients hard times, not because the power of attorney is illegal per se. It's more of a policy they have inside the institution. So say, for instance, you take the power of attorney to a bank. Their concern is that if you don't have a newer power of attorney, there's a great chance that it has been revoked. And what these institutions are feeling from their end is that they don't want to recognize an older one, at least internally, because if they do and it had been revoked, they feel like they're going to be getting in trouble, and they mm-hmm. get calls. And a lot of times what we're hearing is that, you know, ex-spouses will go in with an old power of attorney and clean out the other, you know, their ex's bank accounts with
yeah.
it, you know, and how is the bank supposed to know? I mean, that it was revoked. So a lot of times the banks now will have you sign the person that's using the power of attorney, the attorney in fact, if you will be asked to sign an affidavit. It's
exactly.
to their knowledge oh, that, yeah. that, and I'm sure you've probably even
yep,
seen
this
that
in the
financials.
All the time. Even yeah. it's 2 years, so anyone right. older than 2 years, there has to be that affidavit, additional
exactly.
paperwork to confirm it.
Right.
So how often, Brendan?
It's funny you say 2 years. We're giving the 2 year thing too. So in our office, we offer our clients free durable power of attorney. Just come in and get it refreshed. We call
oh,
them
nice.
Just refreshing it every 2 years. But again, John, there is really nothing technically wrong with what you have. It's just that more and more institutions are asking for verification that it is still intact, just because so much time has passed. So my advice to you is that if you and your wife, you know, have a chance, you may want to think about getting those things just updated, or you know, unless, you know, the affidavit, Ryan, I don't know how involved is the affidavit in your office.
I wouldn't say it's super involved, but
yeah.
sometimes it requires some additional paperwork
sure.
or you know, new signatures from
mm-hmm.
all parties. You know, we recommend, you know, at least every 5 years to look into it.
What I would say, John, too, is that if this power of attorney was part of an overall estate plan that you did back in 97, you may want to have your plan looked at anyways.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage our clients to come in every few years at mm-hmm. most,
yeah.
If not sooner, to just have, you know, a check-in, you know.
Because hey, things change that
things
you would
change.
Never even think
That's
of.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Now, one more question.
Mm-hmm.
My healthcare proxy, I've been told that I need two signatures. I have healthcare proxy, but it only has one signature. There's something to mention. There's a law that's come out that you need two signatures.
Well, you need two witnesses. So, you know,
witnesses,
that's statute. That's by statute. The healthcare proxy in our state is a statutory is a statutory relationship that's created. The agency that's created there, and you do by statute need two witnesses. So,
has it always been like that?
Since I think it went into effect in 1990, it's been
okay.
That way.
Wow.
Before then, there was it was a different situation. But if you only have one, I would recommend that you get that updated too, John.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you very much.
So you said that you, for existing clients, you'll update that every couple of years free of charge?
That's right. If clients, yeah.
An attorney doing something for free?
Well, it's part of our service. We just, exactly right.
Got to give you the shot.
Yeah. I'm an attorney, and I'm used to it by now. And actually, it's funny. We actually feel good about keeping those things updated for our clients because, we don't want to be in the mess with
right?
it later on either.
Exactly.
So it's almost easier
covering
for us
all the bases
right,
for everybody.
To keep these plans mm-hmm. intact because we're the ones there at the end of the day administering this stuff, and so to the extent that the stuff works, all the better for us too. And obviously for the client.
Definitely. And Brendan, the reason that we refer clients to him frequently is because oftentimes, I'd say more than 50% of the time, there is something in the existing plan that was overlooked mm-hmm. or could missed or could be improved upon. So you guys go through the fine tooth comb and
we offer free consultation. So mm-hmm. it's all the client's going to lose his time. We'll be happy to look at anyone's plan, including yours, John. To take a look and say, hey, this is looks good, doesn't look good. This is and no cost to that. But if this is what you want to do, this is what I would recommend, and this is what the price would be.
Right.
So the only thing that's going to cost them is some time.
Definitely, and we say that to clients too, because initially we might have some people who ask a question kind of in passing or
sure.
just call in,
right.
whether it's someone we've never spoken with or an existing client, and they just want to kind of brush over it. And, we say if you have the time and you want to come in, we want to ask all the right questions and address everything. And it's very rare that something additional isn't uncovered where, we're able to add some value.
Right.
If you have questions for Brendan or you'd like to set up an appointment with him, they're on 71 Elm Street in Worcester. The number there for his office is 508-751-5010. And again, email if you'd like to just shoot him a quick question or you want to get on his newsletter. It's bking@estatepreservationlaw.com. So we have a few minutes, Brendan. I think one thing that we wanted to touch on quick, this was something again this year, pretty recent. It was signed in December,
That's
because
right.
the government likes to do everything right at the last minute. But it's the new Massachusetts Homestead Act. So
right.
can you just touch on what that's all about?
Yeah, signed December 16th and went into effect day before St. Patrick's Day, March 16th. And basically what the new homestead was attempting to do is answer a lot of the questions that have kept coming up. And it did do that. And mm-hmm. But like the whack-a-weasel game we talked about before, it answered those questions.
I prefer the alligators.
it also raised a lot more questions. And so, the big questions that, it answered was, or the things that have changed that's nice is that there's an automatic homestead now, $125,000. But if you file one, you get $500. That
right.
hasn't changed. Okay. So you still get the $500
filing. What's involved with filing if someone wants that higher limit?
So basically, you've just got to file a declaration of homestead at the Registry of Deeds, and it's $35
okay.
bucks to do it. So the recording fee.
Sounds like it's worth it. Sounds like it's a good return on your investment.
And the idea is that it protects the equity in the home from your general creditors. Now, not nursing home situations, mind you. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes people get confused about that. Oh, my house is protected from the nursing
right,
home because
no.
I have a homestead. No, that's
something that's a different animal altogether.
Different animal altogether, and that's a whole different type of planning. But it is good because we have this automatic homestead exemption. And if you file, you've got an extra $5. The good news also is that you can have your home in trust now. That's been clarified in a trust and have it have a homestead. Whereas
mm-hmm.
before, we were always on the assumption there was some, it was certainly gray.
Right.
But
right.
we were always with the belief that no, you couldn't. And so we would keep our clients' houses out of the trust, file the homestead, and then, have the trust maybe go in later on.
nice to have some certainty in an nice. Uncertain world.
That's
with
right.
So many changes.
That's right. Now the trick there, and what has come into a reality when we look at the statute, is that the you've got to be careful, because if your trust has more than one beneficiary in it, that $500,000 gets allocated among all the beneficiaries. So you might not get the full five for yourself as the person who's living there. So we've designed actually a trust that is actually going to make sure that that happens. So it's funny because, you've got legislation and that comes in, and then we've got to come back with something that fits it. And so we've done that at our office. But we still have the elderly disabled homestead that was there before for
higher
the extra
limit,
that's
right,
right.
Half
so
a
that,
million.
So if you have two people there that say that are over 62, you can get half each for the full $1 million protection. That was good. The other thing that it answered was, newly filed homestead revoke the old homestead? Okay, that was always a concern, and it did into the old law, but it doesn't now. So I'm going to leave it with that, because I know we need to wrap up some final stuff here.
We can't just stay here all day.
I'd love to.
All right. So again, thanks everybody for tuning in. Ryan Kittredge with Richard Karn Associates. If you have any questions for me or for Rich, we're at 20 Park Ave in Worcester. The number for us, 508-795-0264. And if you want to just shoot me an email, it's ryan@carfinancial.net. Brendan, thank you very much. Brendan King with the State Preservation Law Offices. Thanks a lot, and we'll definitely have you back soon.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. And just a parting note, if you want a homestead handout, we actually have one for our office. You can call me or send me an email.
Yep, bking@estatepreservationlaw.com. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend.